Hello and welcome to The Swiss Connection. I'm Susan Masika. In this episode, we're taking a look at a woman born in India, loved and hated in the US, reborn in Switzerland, and resurrected on Netflix in the series Wild, Wild Country.
You're running for cover because I've called your godlike figure a pimp.
No, I'm not running for cover, mister. I don't run for cover. And person like you make me run for cover? Ah, that's a joke.
That was Ma Anand Sheela, the right-hand woman of spiritual guru Bhagwan Rajneesh, also known as Osho. And joining me in the studio is another Anand, Swiss Info journalist Anand Chandrasekhar. Hi, Anand.
Hi, Susan.
So, a couple of unfamiliar names maybe to some of the listeners. Maybe you could tell us, so who was this guru?
Well, the guru was called Bhagwan Rajneesh, or he was later known as Osho as well. And he was a spiritual guru who was from India. And he started developing a following in India in the 1970s. And it was really in the 80s where he managed to convince a large number of people to join him and build an ashram or a spiritual retreat for him in Western India.
And the belief system? What was he promoting? What kind of a lifestyle or culture?
Well, he was a bit different from some of the other gurus. He didn't like denying himself luxuries in life. And his approach to wealth and sex was quite different from what was preached by other gurus or by other religions.
Look around, my people, and you will not find more rejoicing people anywhere.
Rejoicing, even as they hand over their millions?
Yes, is still rejoicing. I sell contentment. I sell enlightenment.
He was quite happy to have, lots of Rolls-Royce cars around him, to live in a nice accommodation, to enjoy the finer things in life, like, fancy watches. And he didn't like inhibitions surrounding sex. And this caused a lot of controversy in India, which was kind of a prudish society at the time. And he was also known as the sex guru.
And this big following, so he ended up in the United States, didn't he? But was it that he had to leave India? Was he leaving in disgrace when he formed a new community abroad?
Well, there was a lot of speculation about the reasons for him leaving. Some people say it was because of tax purposes. The Indian government, they didn't quite like his activities and maybe wanted to impose taxes on his properties and he didn't want to pay those taxes. Others say it was because of health reasons. He was a very fragile individual. He suffered from a lot of allergies and he couldn't stand the dust and pollution in India at the time. So he was looking for a new place to start his new spiritual retreat. He had tasked Ma Anand Sheela, who he appointed as his secretary in 1981.
I wonder what the job ad was like.
Oh, it wasn't a job ad. Basically, the previous secretary was also asked to find a new place for this spiritual retreat, and she failed. She couldn't find a place in India because the government was against this kind of commune. And he gave the job to Ma Anand Sheela, who he saw as someone capable of handling the pressure.
And she was already in his community, or was she an outsider at that point?
Well, she was in his community by that time. Apparently, her parents were followers of Rajneesh, and one day they took her to visit him, and she fell in love with him. She rose up in the ranks and attracted attention, and then she got the job as his secretary.
Okay.
In 1981.
And that was a fairly powerful position then, if she was somebody who could be then looking could you still call it an ashram when it was such a big place? I thought that was more of a small...
Yeah, I mean, it's a commune, you could say. You could call it a commune.
Okay.
So there were big plans to establish a unique city, a commune that had never existed before, on a scale that had never existed before. We're talking about thousands of people. And this had never happened, he wanted it to be a kind of utopia where all his ideas could flourish. And Sheela was tasked with finding this magical place that would help fulfill his vision of a special society.
And she found it in Oregon, the state of Oregon in the United States.
Yeah, of all the places, she was familiar with the U.S. because she had lived there for some time. She had studied there. So she thought the U.S., you know, with its liberal constitution, would be an ideal place for accommodating these kind of ideas. And she began looking in the U.S. And she was frustrated because time was running out and Rajneesh was getting frustrated. And just as she was about to give up, she found this ranch in Oregon. And she said, yeah, you know, she bought the ranch. And then she started working on building this city called Rajneeshpuram, you know, named after Rajneesh. Mm-hmm. And she then told Rajneesh that, you know, yeah, you can come and visit now. You know, we have something for you.
So they managed to build the city, and there people were living there. And when did it all start to go wrong then? When did it become a problem and such an exciting story that Netflix decided to make a series about it?
Well, you know, they wanted to build a city. They wanted to build an actual city. And in the U.S., if there are a certain number of residents, if you can muster a certain number of residents, then you have the right to call yourself a city. So they called themselves a city, and then they had their own mayor, and they had their own police force. And, of course, all of this made the locals quite unhappy. They were not pleased about the fact, you know, that these people wearing red-colored robes were wandering all around their place, and they were, you know, taking control of the municipality and, you know, throwing their weight around. The commune wanted a certain permissions to construct buildings and things like that, which the municipality wasn't willing to give them. So they tried to take over the local politics and install all the commune members in the local council so that they could approve almost everything they wanted. And that is when things started really getting difficult between the locals and the commune members. And there were threats against the commune as well, and people wanted them out. So there was a lot of friction. And this put pressure on local politicians. And they were looking for ways by which they can eject the commune.
Things began to unravel. So what was the low point? Now, can you maybe describe what was the turn of events that made it that this new city couldn't be anymore?
There was a lot of conflict with the locals. The local politicians wanted them out. There was a case where a lot of the local residents fell ill.
Oh.
And a local politician suggested that it could be because they were poisoned by the commune members.
But how, I mean, how would that have happened?
Well, there's a lot of theories were sort of being floated around, like, you know, they had a biological terror lab where they would...
Oh.
They would put salmonella bacteria into all these salad bars in the restaurants because they wanted to swing the outcome of the local elections. So,
wow.
Yeah, there were all kinds of theories being spouted. And what happened was at the time, Rajneesh had taken a vow of silence, so Manan Sheila was his spokesperson, so everything went through her.
How did she know what he wanted to say if he was silent?
Exactly. I mean, in her autobiography, Sheila says that Rajneesh was aware of everything that happened, and she had to do what she had to do to protect the commune.
Okay.
Even if it meant, you know, certain practices like perhaps poisoning the local
bar.
Community. Whatever it took,
okay.
Or
mm-hmm.
maybe planning the assassination of certain politicians and officials at the Attorney General, whoever stood in the way of, you know, the commune from succeeding.
And she even sort of admitted this, didn't she? Or she suggested that she was capable, no?
Yeah, she never directly admitted that she was behind all of this. She seemed to indicate that it was all Rajneesh's idea and she was merely carrying out orders. But all of this came to a head in 1985 when, according to her, she felt that... Rajneesh was demanding too many luxuries. You know, he had about over 90 Rolls-Royce cars at the time.
Good Lord.
And he was demanding more Rolls-Royce cars and more diamond-studded watches. And that...
Any from Switzerland?
Probably from Switzerland,
mm-hmm, yeah.
So she was finding it difficult to satiate his demands. And she, one day she just left she took her entourage with her, took a flight and flew away to Germany.
Oh, okay. So Germany, that's an interesting choice.
Yeah, because I don't know why she chose Germany, but probably because she thought she wouldn't be extradited to the U.S. from there. But that's where she was wrong.
Oh. So they were out looking for her.
And after she left, Rajneesh was not happy. He was angry.
Love affair never ends. It can turn into a hate affair. She did not prove to be a woman. She proved to be a perfect bitch.
And he broke his vow of silence.
I was going to say, now he had to speak for himself.
And he wanted her to pay the price. And he blamed her for everything, from the poisoning of the local residents with salmonella to murder attempts on local politicians. He blamed her and her entourage for everything that had happened.
He says you tried to poison his doctor, his dentist, his caretaker, that one of your assistants jabbed his doctor jabbed his doctor in the butt with a poison needle.
That's very nice. Did she do a good job?
The doctor apparently is still alive.
Then obviously she didn't do a good job. And I guarantee if she was my assistant, she would have done a good job.
And as a result, eventually Sheila was extradited from Germany. And she had to serve a prison sentence. She was given a 20-year prison sentence, but it was commuted to 39 months.
Okay.
Because they couldn't make a lot of the charges stick. It was a plea bargain arrangement.
Right.
So she accepted the charges of wiretapping.
Mm-hmm.
So basically wiretapping all the phone calls that were made in the commune.
Uh-huh, okay.
And immigration fraud, because sometimes they had to get marry international commune members with Americans so that they could continue staying on the commune.
Ah, I see.
So she spent 39 months in prison.
Still, all right, that's a little over 3 years, not an eternity quite. And, well, as I was saying earlier, she was reborn in Switzerland.
Yeah, she when she finished her prison sentence, she wondered where she would want to go. She went back to Germany in the beginning.
Ah, okay.
And when she was on a shopping trip to Switzerland, she found out that she couldn't get back into Germany. The authorities didn't want her there.
Really?
Yeah. I guess it had something to do with pressure from the U.S. So she was stuck in Switzerland.
Stuck in Switzerland after a shopping trip. Well, I don't know how the exchange rate was then, but...
And luckily for her, one of her husbands was Swiss. He was in charge of the commune in Zurich. And she got Swiss citizenship through him. But he was dead by the time she came out of prison and all of this happened.
Okay.
So she found herself all alone in Switzerland.
Okay, I see.
With no job, nobody to take care of her. And she had to find a way to make a new life.
When I was in prison, I remained with the prison. I tried to look inside myself. My character was fully assassinated by Bhagwan and his people and Oregon government. And I was trying to digest that. I had no idea what I would do after I come out. I just took day by day.
But luckily she had a Swiss passport, so she could start again, a new life, and you, Anand, got to meet her.
Yeah, this was even before I'd seen the documentary or even knew about the documentary, Netflix documentary, Wild, Wild Country. So somehow I was doing my research and I realized that Shman and Sheila was now living in Switzerland. And it was quite surprising to know that she was here and I could interview her. And I sent her an email and she was quite open to the idea of an interview.
But when you asked her, I mean, how did you propose this interview? Did you talk much about her past or what?
No, I just wanted to learn more about what she was doing right now, which is running two disabled homes near the city of Basel and a bit in the countryside. And for me, this was the most interesting aspect, to see how she could, you know, transform herself from, you know, the leader of a commune to somebody who takes care of disabled people in Switzerland. It was a big leap for her. And I wanted to find out what led her to that transformation and how difficult it was to rebound from prison and all the accusations and then start a new life in Switzerland.
It was after my time in prison, and I had to create my own living now. I had to begin somewhere. And I missed my parents very much. I saw in old people my parents. And that's how come I thought of setting up, taking care of a few people in my own place.
So you visited one of the homes, and what's it like? How does it compare to other nursing homes you might have been to or seen pictures of?
Sheila has a different approach to caring for the disabled. She believes that they shouldn't be isolated or shut away into certain parts of the home. They were free to roam anywhere they wanted within the home. And she had this special room that she called the Dementia Temple, where the most ill patients would all sleep together in the night, and in the daytime it would be used as an office. Another idea of having this Dementia Temple kind of room was to expose them to the idea of death.
Mentally ill people have massive anxiety of dying. So these people also should come in contact with it to see there is nothing to be afraid of. It is a natural process which we all have to go through. Then why not acquaint ourselves from the start?
And how did you feel when you were in there?
It was quite a strange experience, because it didn't make sense to me in the beginning. But then when Sheila explained the rationale behind it, I could see that, you know, the patients were not limited in any way. They could go anywhere they wanted, and if they didn't want to be in that room, they could go upstairs if they wanted, including into Sheila's own bedroom.
Oh.
Sheila lives in one of these disabled homes, and she has a bedroom upstairs, and it's never locked, and patients are allowed to come in and visit it any time of day or night.
Oh, so she's always on duty then, basically.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. She doesn't shut herself away from her patients, and there's no private space as such.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the patients, were you able to speak with any of them?
Yeah, the patients were quite a diverse bunch. They came from a wide variety of countries. Many of them had been there for several decades, long-term patients. I think the youngest was about 42 and the oldest was 83.
Mm-hmm.
So wide age range. And many of them were still able to do normal things. You know, they would have art classes and things like that. So, yeah, it didn't feel like a home for the disabled when I was there.
And what about Sheila? What was she like?
She was incredibly frank about her past and how it affected her and all the difficulties that she had. And she would never hesitate to answer any question, which can be a dream for a journalist, but for a family member, maybe not so much fun, because her sister was also there.
And, oh, while you were there?
Yes, and she didn't like the fact that a journalist was nosing around asking questions and digging up skeletons from the past.
Could you still imagine that she was that same person? Could you picture that she had done some of the things that had gotten her put in prison? Or
it's very difficult to say, because, of course, she's doing something quite radically different from what she was doing before. But you can still see that she has the ability to manage people and to take care of things. You can see her organizational abilities, sort of glimpses of the old Man and Sheila now and then. And she's now in charge of 29 patients, which is not nothing. And many clinics, they send patients to her, especially difficult cases. So while it might be a far cry from managing thousands of people and millions of dollars like in Rajneeshpuram, she's just as proud of what she's achieved in Switzerland.
After I left Bhagwan, everything I do is my baby. And I'm proud to say his training comes handy. But this is my life's work. Rajneeshpuram was Bhagwan's life's work. And this is purely my life's work with my team.
So as we mentioned earlier, Anand, you did a story on this subject, and it's on swissinfo.ch. But what else will readers find if they go there? What haven't we talked about here?
Well, readers will be able to learn more in detail about the Rajneeshpuram commune, some of the trials that Sheila faced, as well as you'll have pictures. You can see what her disabled home looks like and what Sheila looks like and the kind of environment she's living in. So, yeah, it'll give you a nice picture of who she is right now.
Sounds great. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Anand, for joining in the studio. And thanks also to you for listening and to studio technician Donnie Wheeler. Signing off for all of us here, I'm Susan Masiko.